What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 58 of the MM Arcade Podcast. And Rob, we got a couple of nice cards coming up over the next 2 weeks. However, you need to tell everyone something at the start here, so I'll let you have it.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, guys, but this is going to be the last episode for a couple of weeks. I'm going away, working on some projects, working on some things. So it'll all be revealed at the end of everything, but just a little hush-hush at the moment. So hopefully this episode gets you through, scratches that itch. Probably won't, because the cards are kind of a bit lackluster, but that's just how it is for now. So I'll see you guys in I want to say three weeks, you know, but I'll be messaging Johnny, updating things on what's going on. And as soon as we can get back, I'll be back.
100%. And that's kind of why I mentioned that we got a couple of nice cards coming up, because not only will we be doing our predictions for the fight night this weekend with Adesanya and Imavov, but also we'll talk about our predictions for Dricus and Sean too. So we're still covering as much as we can in the lead up. So if you're new to the channel, please do like, subscribe. But Rob, as I mentioned, UFC fight night this weekend, Israel Adesanya against Nassourdine Imavov. Let's cover the tape a little bit. Israel Adesanya, 24 wins, 4 losses. Coming off, of course, losses against Dricus with that face crank submission and Sean Strickland when he lost the title. Nassourdine Imavov is doing decently well at the moment. 15 wins, 4 losses. He beat Brennan Allen by decision. He beat Jared Cannonier in a controversial ending to the fight. And also Roman Dolidze. Rob, you've had a bit of time to think about this now. You trained with Izzy while, of course, he was training with for Nassourdine and that fight. Give me your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, so I guess let's just look at Adesanya and Imavov, right? It's so hard for me to bet against Adesanya in just about any matchup. I think his spacing, his control of the space, the way he utilizes his counters, his aggressive fighting, his pressure with his length, his feints make him very hard to take down. And if you're not taking him down, you're having like a long night in the office. Okay. Now, understandably, he lost against Dricus last fight, but I think he turned up phenomenally for that fight. I think his striking was on point, crystal clear. Dricus is just tough as shit, dude. Man, he's tough as hell. Okay. And, you know, honestly, in the round that he beat Izzy in, I thought he was going to die at the beginning of it. You know what I mean? He's a special dude, man. He's got such a unique style. So I don't think it's too much of a negative for Adesanya. If we see that Adesanya turn up against Imavov, I think we see a very, it's going to be a good night for him in the office. But, okay, Imavov's grappling's very good, okay? He gets the back of just about every opponent he fights, okay? That's kind of where the fight wins for him. He doesn't beat Izzy in a 5-round striking contest. He takes him down. He tries to get his back. He gets his back. And whether or not Izzy defends that position, holds out, gets out of it, et cetera, et cetera. Okay?
Yeah.
Obviously, the idea with Adesanya moving into the fight is going to be to not give the back at all costs. Granted that it's such a clear-cut direction for Imavov to try to achieve. Because like I said, just about every fight he's had, he gets the back. He gets that body lock, that body triangle, and just like really works there. So I think that's pretty much the fight we're going to see. We're going to see Adesanya trying to keep his space, piecing him up. Imavov trying to bully him up against the fence, close the distance, take him down, get his back.
Yeah. I this is obviously one of those, you know, up-and-comer moments, taking on a veteran in the division. And I personally, I'm siding with you on this. I think this is going to be that moment where, of course, we're going to see Nassourdine be really tested, because if you really break down his previous fights against Brendan Allen and Jared Cannonier, who are, of course, are top-tier fighters, they were very competitive fights, right? Like, they were going neck and neck. Even in that Brendan Allen fight, Brendan Allen was trying to shoot for takedowns constantly. But when they were standing on their feet, Allen was holding his own against Imavov in the striking department. But they were fairly competitive. Israel is another level above. I just question whether Nassourdine has that striking ability, can get up close, can avoid Adesanya's counter striking. He is quick. He is springing. He has crisp striking. Let's not deny ourselves. I just don't know whether he's on the same tier as Adesanya.
Yeah, like I said, I find it very hard to bet against Adesanya in just about any stand-up match. Just because I think it's not only his expertise in the striking game, but it's his physical stature with like which it lends itself, right? It's, he's got long arms. He's got long legs. He's quick and nimble. He knows how to set up the shots. He's good at countering. He's got the experience behind his belt. He's got good kicks. It's just he's got a lot to play with. And he's really comfortable there. So, yeah, I don't see Imavov beating him in a 5-round stand-up fight. Okay, but is he's going to shoot? Is he going to get the takedown? Is he going to get Izzy's back? How well will Adesanya go when Imavov has his back? You know, that's the kind of the million-dollar question, really.
And but the cardio is a big question as well. Because, like, if you – I don't know if you remember that that Brendan Allen fight, which is only a 3-rounder, like, Imavov was tired. He was gassed by the end of it. And it was because Allen was shooting so much, he was having to sprawl and defend a lot of takedowns. But in a 3-rounder, he was looking tired. Jared Cannonier was a 5-rounder. They only got to the fourth. But he was looking pretty exhausted by that stage until, obviously, he got that shot against Cannonier. But Izzy is very comfortable in the 5-round fights. That's also my biggest point of difference.
He's got that much experience with 5-round fights that... We're gonna have to see. I find it very hard to back to go against Adesanya. I got Adesanya in this, and I do know that with moving with him, he has been working his jiu-jitsu. His jiu-jitsu game is much better than people give him credit for. He's been working that game to take away, honestly, the clearest path to victory for Imavov. And if that kind of takedown grappling game is negated, I don't see him losing in the hands.
Yeah, that's fair. If this went 5 rounds and they were just standing and begging, I really see Israel Adesanya piecing him up. I mean, we also saw Nassadine lose against the likes of Sean Strickland as well. So, yeah, I'm also leaning for Izzy as well. And he also is the odds-on favorite for this, which I don't think is a big surprise.
Yeah. I'd be very curious to see how Adesanya stands up to Strickland in the second fight, to be honest. Like,
can I ask you a hypothetical?
That Adesanya was very different in that fight.
Is it fair to say, I was trying to think of like a line to describe Izzy's past two fights. Is it fair to say that Strickland fight, he had a night off or an off night? Because against Strickus, yes, he lost. But as you said, he was actually doing really, really well until he ended up getting submitted like that because Strickus is so awkward and strong. But against Strickland, like, it just wasn't the same Izzy that we saw in previous fights. Is that fair to say that he had an off night against Strickland?
Yeah, he definitely had an off night. You know, and an off night might look like he just wasn't performing super well and Strickland was performing very well. You know what I mean? Like, it could just be that. It could just be a really on night for Sean Strickland, right? But I don't know. I feel like we would see a different fight if they fought again. I don't see Strickland doing the same fight twice.
No, so the interesting thing for me is that if Nassadine goes on hypothetically to win this, I think that puts him in good stead to have one more fight against another top contender. I don't know, maybe the loser of Trickus and Sean, and that puts him into a title position. What if Izzy won? What happens then? Because, like, who else does Izzy fight in that? Because Khamzat's already getting that title opportunity. Dana has said that. Does Izzy fight also the fights the loser of Trickus and Sean? Maybe let's say either of them loses, Izzy wants to get that win back. So I think those could be good matchups as well, seeing Izzy go back against either of them. What do you reckon?
Honestly, it's too hard to speak on the division. The division's moving so much lately. And honestly, 6 months from 3 months from now, the division will look very different than it does right now. So
fair.
Honestly, I think with this stage of career that Adesanya's in right now, I think he wins his fight and then just chills and takes fights he's happy and looking to have fun in, sort of thing. I think that's all right. The stage he's at, because he's been at the top. He's ran he's run the division for a while. Like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I can kind of get that vibe that he's just kind of he's in it for the love of it right now, rather than. Fair. You know, I'm sure he would jump at a title opportunity, but I don't know. The division's very fluid right now.
It is. By the way, I do want to address something. So in our last podcast episode where I was kind of like talking about the division and up and comers, and I mentioned Kai Obuhayo, people were like, oh, Johnny just leaked Rob's next fight. That's absolutely not the case. I was just listing examples. Rob, your next fight isn't booked in at all.
No, we've spoken to the UFC. We've given them a date. And like I said, because the division's so mobile right now, like things pop up left, right, and right. You know, you just got to be ready.
Yeah. All right, so both of us are leaning toward Israel Adesanya against Nassourdine Imavov. But this fight night, bro, has got a few decent fights on there. The next fight we have also in the middleweight division, Shara Bulatmagomedov against Michael Venom Page. MVP, of course, moving up in weight. Shara, 15 wins, 0 losses. He just beat Armin Petrosian with that double spinning back fist KO. Mikhail Oleksiychuk as well by a decision. Antonio Troccoli wasn't the best fight, but that happened. MVP, of course, is coming off a loss against Ian Garry. Before that, he beat Kevin Holland, 23 wins, 3 losses. Now, Rob, when I first brought this fight to your attention, you weren't the biggest fan of it. Has your opinion changed?
Well, no, it's not the fight. It's just Shara's a bit how you going sometimes. We were talking about Shara, like what we saw in that clip before, and I don't know, he just rubs me the wrong way a little bit.
Fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going for MVP in this fight. I like to see him win. I think his style is it's very dynamic. I don't know if it's got a lot of staying power. We saw in that fight with Ian Garry, like if he's not controlling the entire fight, he has trouble winning the fight. Like doing what he wants. You know, Ian Garry was really good at just kind of shutting down a lot of MVP strengths. I don't know how that's going to look with Shara. Honestly, Shara's got some great matchups, man. this is another great matchup for him. He's a striker, a dynamic striker, unorthodox striker. MVP is an unorthodox striker. He's going to give him the space to play in. This is a fight that is like another one of those kind of it's going to draw a lot of new fans and bring a lot of light and stuff to the division, to the game, because of just like this is kind of a recipe for a good fight, you know, like a good striking fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, you say that, and then I remember the concerns that you shared before. This also has the opportunity of being like not the most exciting, fun fight. You know what I mean? Like they just hit a bit of a stalemate. And like on paper, you think, Michael Venom Page, awesome striker, you know, likes to come in quick from a long distance. Shara's always pushing forward, really unorthodox striking, awesome leg kicks. But also, it might just turn out to be like they're a little bit hesitant on each other. They can't quite work each other out. I am leaning towards Shara only because he is a natural middleweight. You know, he's been doing pretty well recently. I just don't know what also MVP's kind of headspace is at right now after his previous loss against Ian Garry. I felt like that stunted his momentum in the UFC so drastically. Like he was this big star coming in from another company, and he was meant to be setting the world on fire, winning fights here and there, and then he lost in his second fight. So I don't know where his headspace is at. I don't know why he's taking on a fight in a different division, because he said he's going to go back down and wait after this. So I'm leaning towards Shara. I just hope that they both put on a show.
Yep. I can also see MVP just winning by decision. I can see them kind of having a back and forth and MVP like scratching it out, unless there is a very big power difference and he can't exchange with Shara at all. Because then we'll see Shara win by decision. It's tricky. I don't like it when guys go up a division with the intent of going back down. You can't let your body fully adjust to the division.
Yeah.
You can't let your body fully take size and fight these bigger guys. I don't know. But maybe he knew he was going to be fighting Shara, so that it was going to be a stand-up fight. Obviously, weight means a little less, you know, in a stand-up fight. I don't know, but maybe Shara takes him down, beats him up there. I don't know.
It's a bit of a weird decision. Like, sure, keep active, you know, have money coming into your bank account. And maybe at welterweight, there just wasn't an immediate fight for him. But I still find that a little bit hard to believe. Like, there's Carlos Prates there. Like, Wonderboy's probably still fighting. You know, at some stage, Colby Covington probably needs a fight. There seems to be fights available to be made. So I don't know why a middleweight bout against Shara was the decision.
There's no way Colby would take on MVP. No way.
What the hell? Who the hell is Colby going to fight? Like, if he's not fighting MVP, he's not fighting
Colby's
anyone else.
Colby's
the
king
like,
of picking fights, dude.
True. But you reckon Michael Venom Page?
I'm going for MVP.
For the win.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know who wins this fight.
It's a bit of a weird one.
I don't know the favorite, but I assume Shara would be the favorite. But I'm going for MVP because Shara's a bit, there you go.
All right. That is the co-main for this fight card. Next fight, we have a heavyweight bout, Sergey Pavlovich against Jarzynho Rozenstruik. Pavlovich, 18 wins, 3 losses. Of course, he's coming off against 2 losses against Alexander Volkov, decision, and also Tommy Aspinall, who knocked him out. Jarzynho Rozenstruik, 15 wins, 5 losses. He's coming off that win against Tai Tuivasa at UFC Perth. I was there seeing that. That was pretty cool. And also Shamil Gaziev to TKO via retirement. That was a weird one. Rob, Pavlovich against Rozenstruik, who do you got?
What does TKO retirement mean?
I can't remember distinctly, but I think he just got tired and he just gave up. Someone correct me, please, but I distinctly remember something.
What do you mean? Was it like in the round or on the stool?
I think it was. Let me look it up because it was a weird one. But okay. Yeah, he just kind of. I'll stop.
I think if we see the Rozenstruik that fought Tai with excellent discipline, utilizing the space and distance the way he was, using his kicks and his reach the way he was, he beats Sergey, because that's kind of what we saw against Alexander. And honestly, I mean, when he fought Volkov, okay, but if we see the Rozenstruik that just beat Tai, I think he beats Pavlovich. Obviously, Pavlovich has that one hit power, and since losing the way he did to Volkov, I'm sure he's gone back to assess some things and change things up. Or maybe he hasn't. But if we see the Tai Rozenstruik, and we see the Volkov Sergey, Rozenstruik beats him.
I'm pretty much on the exact same wavelength as you. I think. Like, don't get me wrong, this is heavyweight. Anything can happen, you know, and Rozenstruik has been knocked out before. Like, it's just the nature of the division. So Pavlovich is going to be looking to do that, getting back to his winning ways prior to the Tommy Aspinall loss, and looking to knock Rozenstruik out. But Volkov really, you said this before, bro, about how some fighter just have like figured out the blueprint to beat another fighter. Volkov has figured out the blueprint to beat Pavlovich. It is staying on the outside, being dynamic, making sure you avoid those power strikes. And I've got to give Jarzynho Rozenstruik credit. He is a really solid kickboxer, right? Yep. So and if he can do something similar to Volkov, I think he can win as well.
Well, and Tai is almost like the perfect pre-fight to fight Sergey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, good shout.
It's like you just work your distance, stay disciplined, avoid his power shots. You know, that's how you beat Sergey. And like I said,
it's obviously hard.
It's hard. It's a fight. But Tai, like, that's the perfect fight to lead into Sergey for me. Like, Rozenstruik wouldn't have to change much. He can only work on and build up from what he had just used. Whereas Sergey, you can see, like, he needs to change a lot from those Volkov fights, from that Tom Aspinall fight. Does. He can't just bear his way in and throw crazy anymore. Tom exposed that and Volkov exposed that. Like, you can stay on the outside and keep him at distance. Obviously, no one's got the reach and sort of thing that Volkov does, but Tom highlighted that if you just rush in, you can get just switched off. And Volkov showed that you can avoid his power hand, like, if he doesn't fully commit to it. So, I think Rozenstruik would be the favorite for this one. He's definitely my pick for this fight.
Yeah. See, it's interesting as well. You know how we always talk about how we're very biased and sometimes it's not about the technical breakdown. It's just we like a fighter. We're going to support him. Yep. I want to say this. Rozenstruik, he was so – I met him in UFC Perth. I did the interview with him. Him and his team were so accommodating, so kind. He's made me a fan for life, brother. Just the way that he talked about him coming up from Suriname, like, you know, it was really wholesome. I really liked it. I appreciated what, you know, how they treated me. So just for that reason, I'm supporting Rozenstruik in this one. Purely biased.
And even if you weren't biased, I think he still wins this fight.
I agree. But Rob, we're not going to go through the rest of these fights, but I just want to mention some of them. Saeed Nurmagomedov against Vinicius Oliveira is fighting. Ikram Alaskarov, Rob, is fighting Andre Muniz. Can I ask you, for Ikram, obviously he hasn't fought since your fight with him. How do you think he might go? He's taken some time off. What do we reckon?
Sometimes you just get caught. He's got a good team behind him. The only thing you do is get back on the horse. That's
fair.
That's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
And then one more fight is Muhammad Naimov against Khan Ofli. So that is the main event for UFC Fight Night. Again, very, very fun. But we've got another card to talk about, Rob, and this is the one that is going to be taking place while you are overseas. So we've got UFC 312 in the main event, Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland for that middleweight title. Dricus, 22 wins, 2 losses, of course. He just beat Israel via submission. He obviously won the title off of Sean Strickland in the first place with a very close, controversial split decision win. Sean Strickland, 29 wins, 6 losses. He just beat Paulo Costa, which was a split decision win as well, and he lost against Dricus, as I just mentioned. Rob, we've talked about this fight a little bit here and there, but can I get your take on it?
Yeah, I feel like I've spoken about this fight too many times, honestly.
I know. I was going to say, I agree. Because you talked about it on Easy's channel and then here sometimes.
I feel like I've talked about this fight too much. And I don't have a ton to say, because if we look at their last fight, Sean lost as the champ, okay?
Yeah.
How does his second fight play out differently, right? And granted, it was controversial, but he lost the decision as the champ. If this fight doesn't change in any drastic way, he's not the champ, you know? And I just don't know what Sean does differently. Sean fights the way he fights. I don't know how he fights differently than he did in that first fight against Dricus. And I don't see Dricus fighting any differently against Sean. If anything, and you saw in that Israel fight, he's gotten better. He's gotten better at his wrestling, at his pressure. He's obviously had those five-round fights to adjust and acclimatize to it.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't see how Sean beats Dricus.
Can I ask you this? Sean recently, I don't know if you saw it, came out and said, "Hey, let's do a pack," Dricus said some other stuff and said, "Let's just stand and bang." And then Dricus' responses is like, there's no pact between lions and men or something. And he's just going to he's gonna take him down straight away if that's all Sean tries to do. What do you think about what Sean said?
Yeah, well, go to boxing, dude. If you want to just stand and bang, switch sports. You know what I mean? Or if your whole argument is like, "Oh, I want the small gloves," then go to bare knuckle. "Oh, what are you going to say then?" "Oh, I want some gloves." you know what I mean? It's like, it's MMA. And I think the whole reason, like, the fights are so exciting is because there's multiple paths to victory. You don't know what could happen. Now, and again, like I said, I don't see what either guy does differently. I think between the two of them, obviously Dricus has had a fight in the interim. He looked better in that fight. I think he's gotten better since their last pairing. Don't know about Sean, because he's done nothing since then. He's just been kind of chilling. So how does this fight have a different outcome with Dricus being the champ?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure he is the favorite heading into this, but you are also leaning with Dricus to win.
Yeah. Like I said, I just don't see how Sean does anything differently to get a different outcome.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. What? Like... I'm like really scratching my brain.
You're struggling.
Because Sean's like he's got really good boxing, okay? And he's going to want to put the pressure on Dricus and just land that jab, set up the right hand, do that teep he does with the lead leg. Dricus doesn't care for conventional striking.
No.
He doesn't care. You saw it with the Adesanya fight. You see, with every fight he's been in, he doesn't care. You can have the best striking to date, and he just goes, rah, 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 rah. You know what I mean? it is like the perfect counter to everything. and then it's like once he's like falling into his shots, and then he's like halfway to a takedown, and then he'll just string it into a takedown. And he is super strong, super heavy on top. He's really, really well-rounded. He's tough as nails. I don't think you beat Dricus with conventional striking. I don't think you beat Dricus with clean boxing or with clean striking. I think you need to, like, you beat Dricus by turning into a dog fight, an absolute dog fight. Like, you got to jump down into the trenches with him and be like, I'm here all day with you. And that's a hard task. Not everyone can do that. So
we talked about this in their first fight as well. And a lot of, to be clear, a lot of people did disagree with me when I kind of did this breakdown and just the fact that Drake has won the fight, right? In the eyes of the judges. But when you look at how fights are meant to be judged, it's damage that's on top, right? And aggression is also considered below that too. When you're doing the teep kicks and you're jabbing a lot compared to someone that's being aggressive, coming in, swinging a bit more widely, landing the bigger strikes, maybe not as many, but they're the bigger strikes when you compare them. Like at the moment with the way fights are being judged and correctly so, in all likelihood, that person that's being more aggressive and landing those bigger individual strikes are probably going to win. And then you just mentioned the fact that now Strickland is not the champion. So he doesn't have that benefit of, oh, if it's a close fight, champion typically gets it. He's going to have to change his game striking-wise a little bit. And even though he's good when it comes to his boxing and his jabs and his teep kicking, he needs to be more aggressive and needs to land bigger strikes if he wants any chance of winning in the eyes of the judges, let alone knocking out Drickus, which I don't think is going to happen. That's just my take on it. I know people might disagree, but he needs to change it up.
I remember when I watched the first time, like I thought Drickus won watching the fight.
Yeah.
But on the same vein, I was like, well, if Sean gets his hand raised, I'm not going to write a letter contesting it. You know what I mean? Like, it was close enough.
This is bull crap. Yeah,
that's just how it is. You know how you beat Drickus? You fight like Marab. You crash into him. You turn into a dog fight. You wrestle him a little bit. You come out. Yeah. You throw it in. You crash back into him. Like, you need that sort of dog.
But if anything, Drickus is the Marab of middleweight. If you really think about it. Kind of.
So, I don't know. It could be super wrong, but like my prediction, don't think so.
All right. So, well, both of us are going to be backing Drickus to win this fight in their rematch and obviously backing Drickus to keep the middleweight belt. There's not a crazy amount of other fights to talk about at UFC Sydney. Like we've got Zhang Weili also fighting as well. But yeah, Rob, did you have any other thoughts about UFC Sydney before we move on to the games news?
Yeah, I feel like UFC, whenever UFC comes to Australia, they wait till every other Australian is booked on some other card. And then they're like, hey, Sydney's now. You know what I mean? It's like, it's always a clashy. There's always like a bunch of Aussies and New Zealanders like the week before or the week after, I feel. It's the timing. I feel like people in the organization aren't talking to each other a little bit sometimes.
Do you think it's just unlucky though? Like, you know, at this stage, they just couldn't get enough Aussie fighters because just the way the cards are handled, like it seems like you, for instance, Rob, the timing that you fight just never lines up with a UFC card in Australia. And if you had just taken a fight like 2 months later, suddenly your cycle completely syncs with Australian cards. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I think it's an unlucky thing too.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, cause the fight game's very, very hard to predict anything. That's why it's very hard for me to predict, like to plan any sort of holidays or anything. Cause you got to get through the camp. You got to see who's available. You got to see what cards are available. Then you got to go through the camp, like no injuries, getting through it, get the fight, no injury. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of moving parts. And it's like, I'm not really talking any schmack about it. It just seems that way sometimes. Like it was like an observation.
And also as well, the one fight that I was really looking forward to, you know, Ilya Topuria's brother was meant to be fighting against Cody Haddon. And I think that fight's been canceled. I saw something on Twitter about it. I was really looking forward to see that because apparently Topuria's brother is better than Ilya. That's what Ilya says. That would have been cool to see his first fight in UFC. Really cool.
I'm seeing grappler together. Yeah. Good grappling, man.
Yeah. But let's see what happens. I will be in Sydney, by the way. I'll be doing the media circuit. And I want to thank the UFC for inviting me. It's very cool to be a part of these things. Next time, Rob, you'll be there. At one of these ones, we'll reunite.
You're welcome. That's what I'll say on behalf of the UFC because I'm going to take it upon myself to be their spokesman right now.
So we're going to go to the video.
I'm tired and I'm getting weird, dude.
I was moving on for you.
Once I start to get tired, I start to get a little weird. So,
yeah. So, to give people the background, you just came from training. What training specifically was it?
It was
like, what were you doing?
Like an hour of boxing followed by an hour of open mat.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's just very hot here today. How hot is it right now?
Yeah, what is it in Sydney? Because Melbourne is also pretty bad too. You're 29 degrees. That's not bad. Really? That's not horrible. Yeah, that's what it says.
No, you got.
It's hotter in Melbourne. What are you complaining about?
It's 5 degrees right now.
Yeah, it's 34 here in Melbourne.
It's 32. 34?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be 37 tomorrow.
Yeah, sometimes Melbourne does get hotter.
I hate the weather in Melbourne, though.
I agree.
The weather in Melbourne's like, it'll be hot and then cold and then muggy and then raining.
And then raining in the one day, and you can't plan for it. It's frustrating. Yeah.
Yuck.
But next up, let's go on to the video game news.
Do you like Biggest Melbourne? News of the week. You've been living there for a little bit.
I really like where we are, and I'm not
transition.
No, it's fine. I like it. I won't obviously give specifics on where I live, but we are relatively close to a beach.
Address.
I will send you the. You can come visit. But hold on, you're the one that dropped by Melbourne there. Recently and didn't give me a call.
I was out in the middle of nowhere, dude.
Yeah, you were 50 minutes from me at that spot,
and like honestly, it was up and back. It was like, it cooked me. I remembered why I didn't do up and back trips because it's rough.
Yeah, I feel you. To answer your question, I like Melbourne. I really miss Sydney though. It's hard, bro, because when you've been in a city for like 8 years, right? I wasn't originally from Sydney. I was from Canberra originally. But I spent 8 years in Sydney. You build a friend group and a network. To just move to another city, you're rebuilding that from the ground up, like from ground zero. That's the hard bit that I'm still struggling with because I haven't been here even for a full year yet. Yeah.
You going to come back or what?
Oh, no. We're here.
Forever.
Don't get me wrong. Because my wife's family's from Melbourne, you know? So, yeah. That's the plan.
Tell them to come to Sydney too.
I wish I could just bring up everyone moving to Sydney.
Just everyone move to... You know what? I'll go as far as like... Move to Canberra.
Look, that's a whole other discussion.
I reckon Canberra's better than Melbourne, dude. All you guys from Melbourne, I reckon Canberra's better than Melbourne.
I'm a Canberra boy, through and through, and I disagree.
You have any comments I'm going to get? Canberra's the funniest place, dude. Oh, but I love it. I'm a proper Sydney boy, but I still reckon Canberra's better than Melbourne.
When is the last time you've been to Canberra? Why would you ever need to go to Canberra?
Well, you only go to either see the Mint, the Memorial, or the AIS, right?
Or Questacon. It's one of those.
I haven't needed to go to either of those for a little bit, so it's been a minute. You know what? I am pumped to take the kids there. Like, I think the kids...
Do it.
I want to take him to Questacon. I want to take him to the Mint just to do it.
You have to at one stage. Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep. Everyone's got to go.
But next
at least
up,
once
it's the capital of Australia. You have to do it. Next up, we've got video game news with the Xbox Developer Direct. It was, I don't know if you got the chance to watch it, Rob, or any of the trailers that dropped afterwards, but Microsoft did this really cool Developer Direct like they do every year. We got to see a lot more of Doom, The Dark Ages, South of the Midnight, Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, which is kind of like a turn-based RPG. And also, Rob, I don't know if you were ever into the Ninja Gaiden series, but they announced Ninja Gaiden 4, which looks sick. So I need you to, as we're speaking, search up the trailer for Ninja Gaiden 4. Did you ever play the original Ninja Gaidens? They're up your alley, for
sure.
I
feel like I played Ninja Gaiden back on Sega.
Hell yeah.
PlayStation 1.
I
can only assume they've changed a lot since then.
This new trailer, it's so stylized. You've got a new protagonist. Like Hayabusa is also going to be appearing in the game. But it's a new protagonist. It's a really cool, bloody style of visual, like stylized art style. It looks really cool, really fast-paced. I can't wait, man. This kind of took me by surprise. I didn't know they were going to announce it.
I'm not super into ninjas. Like, hot take.
That's a surprise to me.
Really? Why? Oh, yeah, I'm not a ninja guy. I'm more of a samurai guy. I like samurai.
I thought you would like Ninja Gaiden because of the gameplay, you know?
Ninjas are like sneaky boys. I'm not very sneaky. I like going in loud and proud sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, then. If you're saying loud and proud, you got to be pumped for Doom. Did you end up playing Doom Eternal?
Now, another hot take.
Oh, here we go. Fire out.
Don't like
Every
Doom.
Time.
Don't like Doom. It gives me anxiety.
Why?
Too much is going on at once. Like the screen's moving at 400 kilometers an hour. I can't keep up with it. It's too much for me.
I'll say this.
Too gothic. Too many demons.
This is the thing. You say that in reference to Doom Eternal. Part of me empathizes. And when they talked about Doom of the Dark Ages, one of the big things that they brought up about Doom Eternal is that the controls are actually fairly complex. And at times when there are a lot of demons around, you're fighting with your controls to try and kill them. And also the game was so jump and shoot, or so vertical. You're like swinging around using your grappling and then using a shotgun from top down. It was like not a traditional Doom game in that sense. With Doom the Dark Ages, the Doomslayer is a lot more heavy. It's like a tank, more grounded. It's more like strafing to aim style gameplay. Kind of slower and a little bit in that sense. It feels like Doom the Dark Ages could be a game to help win you over. That's just my opinion.
I'll explain in the what we've been playing lately, my style of shooters. Okay.
Fair. Okay. I'm very excited for it though. It's going to be a prequel
as well.
I don't
love shooters. There's only a certain type of shooter I like playing.
Yeah, like Helldivers or something like that.
Helldivers was really cool. Like, so the thing, are we moving straight into what?
Let's do it. What we're watching, playing, and reading. Okay. Go on, Rob. You're chomping at the bit.
Let me just tangent on Helldivers. The reason why I thought I like realistic sort of gunplay. Like, I really like Escape from Tarkov. Do you like Escape from Tarkov?
Yeah.
I'm just garbage at it. And that's kind of what kills it for me. Because like I love the whole slow approach, the sneaky, because it only takes a few bullets to kill you. I love that. Okay. Helldivers is cool because everything dies pretty easily, except for like the mammoth sort of looking enemies. And you can realistically think, yeah, it would take a lot of rounds to try and kill one of these things. But the difficulty comes in just the amount of numbers, which gives it that real horde style gameplay that it's prided itself on, which is mad. I love it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So right now I've been playing two games. First one, I've been playing that Age of Darkness with Jack.
Yeah. Nice. What do you think?
I've been playing it. We started easy. Like, it's really cool. I saved it. We haven't finished the game yet. But we've been enjoying it. I think I enjoy this more than Age of Mythology, which was another game I was playing with Jack, because I like the hero options. I like having that. I kind of I like the waves. I like kind of being like a survival element. You can obviously see it's very inspired by There Are Billions. And I like that angle. So it's cool. I still got to work on it. I still because there's heroes and there's leveling with it. I don't know whether I should be going out grinding, because now my hero is a decent level now. He's like level 5. Because like leveling's really slowed down. I assume that's kind of decent. Well, no, he's 6 now, I think. But yeah. I still can't solo entire mobs. Like points of interest. I feel like I should be.
But if you're doing it
six.
In multiplayer, that's kind of not the intention. Like the intensity is amped up a little bit. It's designed for both of you to try and go to a point of interest, take that down, get the resources. So you might have a different experience playing solo.
Okay. Well, no, I can solo points of interest with men. Because coming from Age of Mythology and all that, like,
I've
got footmen coming out the wazoo. But I mean, like, comparatively to like Warcraft 3, where you go out with your hero, you grind
up
the mobs.
Right.
Yeah, and then your hero's level like 12 and you can go around soloing stuff. Just the hero. I feel like I haven't gotten that power level yet with the hero. And I don't know whether the group scale with the hero, because I feel like as soon as I lose a bunch of my men, the hero does less damage. Is that a mechanic?
I don't know if that's specifically a mechanic, but I think it is designed, like the heroes are meant to be paired with your army, like it working in tandem. You're not meant to go out just with your hero and just smash people.
When I have the fodder around, when I have the fodder around, it looks like my hero caves. Like, but then
what hero, as, by the way?
I'm playing the dude that can light his sword on fire.
The very first
one. Stock standard.
Yep.
So it's cool. It's cool. Like, I'm enjoying it. I'm actually going to play some more with Jack after this.
Nice. I'm glad to hear it, bro. Hell yeah. For those of you that don't know, I work at the developer play side. We just went into 1.0 and I managed to convince Rob to play it. So that's sick, bro. Thank you. So you were playing Edwin, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
The fire shield he gets is OP though.
It's your hero. It's kind of the point.
So good, dude. that's been fun. But you know what I've been playing? I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077. And I downloaded about 48 mods. It was part of a collection of turning it into a realistic life sim.
Nice.
It's so cool. So there's no fast travel anymore. And like, if you get shot in the head, you're just dead, period. Like, do not pass go sort of dead. And you got to eat, sleep. You start to get anxiety. So then you got to go like smoke or drink or relax. You know, you got to chill out a little bit.
That's crazy, bro.
It's so much fun though, because like I've only just started. And you know how when you're going around, you see like two gangs having a bit of a shootout or a gang having a shootout with the MPs and the police. And I'm like, I'll come in and I'll just clean up here. So I run in with my gun, dude, and just a stray bullet clips me in the leg and I'm like down to like no health, crippled out, trying to crawl away, and I just get put out. Like, and this happened multiple times. Then I had to load and I come back and I try again. I just get, like, you just die so easily. So it's like, you're not special, you know? And I think that was that's one of the biggest things I like about like Caves of Cards and things like that. You're not the hero. You're just a dude going around. And that's how I feel now. I feel like I'm a part of the city. I'm enjoying it though.
That kind of makes sense with what you just said about Doom, because Doom is meant to be the power fantasy. You are the Doom Slayer and you're just like destroying demons. That's never going to change. That's just the game through and through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also why I didn't like Skyrim. Obviously everyone likes Skyrim when it first came out, but that's why I can't play it anymore. Yeah. Is because like I don't want to be the hero. I want because like Cyberpunk right now with the mods I've got, it's not, I can do it still. Like you just need to take a different approach. You need to go in fast. You need to take the shots. You need to slide out of the way. It's like every mechanic that's in the game is exemplified because you need them. You need to lean. Yeah. You need to slide. You need to move cover. You need to move. Dude, if you get grenaded, you're dead, period. Like there is nothing. I remember I was fighting a boss and I'd taken everybody else and he was just like holding thing. And I threw a grenade at his feet. He was in pieces. He's a boss. That's but it's like, you cool. can't take like a human boss, but you can't take grenades point blank. I just love that. Yeah. I love that, for better or worse.
But that's only because you're using, like, you can mod Skyrim and achieve a very similar result as well. There's so many survival mods for Skyrim.
The modding rabbit hole of Skyrim is too deep. It's too
That's
deep.
True. Modding
is just annoying as hell. Like if there wasn't a collection, so I just downloaded a collection and just installed a collection. If there wasn't a collection, I don't think I'd be playing Cyberpunk because where do you stop? Where do you start? It's hard. Modding's hard, man.
This is something you and I 110% agree on. You spend most of your time modding and then you barely spend any time playing and then you're like, oh, what about this mod and that mod? And it becomes more about the modding and trying to get everything to work correctly. And then it's just not about playing.
The last time I played Skyrim, I spent hours on a mod list. It crashed on startup. Mm-hmm. I just dropped it. I was like, uninstalled the game. I refused to play it anymore. Like, dead set. Like, it burnt me out. I'm gone. It's like, that's so funny, see you later, dude.
Yeah, you have to finesse modding Skyrim. Like, you know, it takes a little bit to get it working.
Yeah. Oh man, so many steps. Like, and hats off to those dudes who know how to mod and they mod properly. But like, I got it. Yeah, it's too hard. What about yourself, dude?
So I'm still playing through Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I'm still very excited for Shadows, and that's the one game, as I mentioned, that I want to get through. But I've been watching some anime because Solo Leveling has just started its new season, and
I saw that. Yeah, I didn't get through the first season.
Far out, man.
I don't know. Anime's just not hitting it for me lately. Like,
that's crazy, man. Solo Leveling is legit good.
I think reading has just killed it for me, dude. Like, I read a lot of light novels, and it's just like it gives so much more depth to the characters and everything else around it that if the anime's not done well, I can't just watch average anime anymore. Like, I do, but then I end up stopping it midway through the episode.
Nah, Solo Leveling is not average. It is, and it started off like as good as it ended in the first season. I think you got to give it a go, bro. No, it's not average.
I'm up to like episode 8 on Solo Leveling. I'll pick it back up.
Yeah. So you're pretty close to the end of it, then,
dude. It was weird how the dude looked stupid and then became a chiseled super.
That's the point.
No, but like there was no lead up. It just was just like a difference in episodes. It was like episode 3, he was a gonk. Yeah. And episode 4, he was a god. Give me something. Build me into this. Show me how this happens. Explain something to me. You know what I mean?
But they did explain it. Hold on. They explained why.
I understand the stats and the attribute system more than most people, but they didn't do it well enough, I feel.
I kind of liked it how it wasn't this slow, gradual change into the character that he is. Like, no, he just like specced up, leveled up a lot, and then he looks completely different. I thought it was funny. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, but like character growth is like it's so important, bro. It's like, have you ever watched Steins Gate?
I started it, but I dropped it.
Okay, Steins Gate is a perfect example of how a character development is done. Because it's like same with Code
Geass.
What's it called? Code Geass. Yeah, same thing. It's like you can see like what they go through, their experiences changes the character of who they are. Like Steins Gate, dude slowly starts to get wigged out, slowly starts to depart reality. Same with Leluk, slowly starts to become a psycho. It's great. I love that sort of development. It's like it just shows effort was put into.
That development, even though he's more powerful. And then when you get to season 2, now we're starting to go neck and neck with like other S-class hunters that are on his level. So it's still there, in my opinion. He just had that one power-up from that one episode. I remember the one you're talking about.
I'll pick it back up.
Give me your honest opinions on it. Try and put that to the back of your head. And I
read the light novel. I thought it was really cool. But
all right. Fair. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. It's been good.
You know what I've been doing with my wife lately? We started yesterday. It's we're going back and watching classics, and I'm gonna mention it here. Have you seen the movie? It's something Meet Joe Black. Is that what it's called? Is that what it's called? Meet.
Oh god, I haven't watched that in a long time. Jesus.
Is that? It is. Meet Joe Black. That is such a good movie. Such a good movie. It is written so well. The dialogue in it is next level. Like, I was captivated. Like, I couldn't. Like, yeah. I really, really like it. I haven't finished it yet. I'm about halfway through. But it is so good. Like, if it's a romance. I didn't think I'd like romance as much as I do now. It's crazy.
I'm a little like romance is not something that I typically jump into unless my wife is like, watch it with me. I'm like, all right.
Brother, you know watch Joe Black. It's wild. Like, it's so good. Right. So good.
It's such a like a wild, like random thing to watch out of nowhere, Rob.
I know, right? Like, so I thought I'd say it because like I want everyone else to be like, you know, stuff it. Rob said it was good. And they put it on, and then they're like, wow, this is mind blowing.
Fair. You know what's funny though? It's one of those movies where it has a really bad critic score but an awesome audience score, and usually those are really, really good. So
I don't follow critic scores anyway.
No, they're starting to get more and more out of touch. I do what I want. Don't tell me what to do. And finally, we have viewer questions. As always, if you have a question for us in the podcast, let us know in the comments below. We won't be able to answer these until the next episode in a few weeks, but we will keep them on hand. First question is from at MMAB. Bet Viper. My question for Rob is, how does he think the fight between GSP and him would have went? And how would he be prepared for GSP if GSP didn't vacate the belt, of course? I'd also be interested to hear how he thinks the Michael Bisping fight would have gone as well. Keep up the good work, Johnny, and congrats for 31,000 subscribers. Thank you so much. Rob, thoughts?
I think, with all due respect, I think I would have beaten him in the stand-up. And I would I have the wrestling defense to stop him from blast doubling me in open mat. I think I would have handled him. Yeah.
For GSP specifically.
Yeah, because he wasn't a natural middleweight anyway. When he fought Bisping, and he looked heavy and sluggish, and he mentioned all of it afterwards. It's kind of why he didn't want to fight again at afterwards, right? Because he felt terrible for that camp. He's naturally a smaller guy.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Bisping? I always touch on how awesome that segment with you and him in the cage was. That was the fight we never got as well. How do you think that would have gone down? With all respect to Bisping, love you, bro.
Yeah, I think I would have beaten him. I think I've got better hands than him. And right. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Next question is from at It's Sophia. What did Rob think about the matcha, and would he do a camp with City Kickboxing? How was the matcha? Rob?
It was sweet. He put sugar in it, so it was all right, you know?
Is it kind of like just caffeine and grass mixed together? That's the vibe that I get.
I don't know. It tasted like a hot chocolate.
Interesting. Interesting.
I don't know if I'd do a whole camp, because we have a lot of really good work here. But I definitely see myself going over for a week here, a week there, much like Volk does, you know, doing stints and just to get the body work in, the different ideas from the different coaches that are there, and then coming back.
Yeah.
I have a lot of good work here. It's just, the 1%, the little bit extra.
Yeah. Dude, Volk, now that you mention it, he travels all the time, man. How many cards is he in the crowd for, and is training with others in the US? He travels so much. It's kind of crazy.
I think he's just enjoying it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, good on him. I can't wait to see. I assume they're going to run it back with Ilya. I just want to see his next fight confirmed, because I'm sick of hearing Ilya might move up and fight Islam and all this. Just fighting your division. Fight Volk. Yep. Get it done, in my opinion. Next question is from at the Rulers Back 18. Question, did Moicano save the card? We already had finishes in Derrida Holland, Almeida Spivak, and Prochaska and Hill, followed by an excellent fight between Merab and Umar. Would it have been the end of the world if Merab Umar was the title fight and Prochaska Hill was the co-main? Were we really missing out on another Islam Makhachev short notice title defense? Here's the thing, right? In hindsight, yeah, we had a bunch of great fights and it probably wouldn't have been an end of the world. But you don't know that going in. You don't know whether you are going to get those fights and whether you really needed that Islam Makhachev fight at the end. So I think going into it, you can credit Moicano for kind of saving the card a little bit. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had Islam fight, and a lot of people paid money. A lot of people were waiting to see Islam fight. That's just my perspective. I don't know what you think, Rob.
Yeah, I don't think he saved the card, but... Yeah, I don't think he saved the card. I don't think it was like that. I don't think there were no other good fights on the card.
Fair.
So we had to throw someone to him to fight. But I always think it's interesting, these last minute fights. I think it's a good opportunity for those who are ready, and it's it always gives you, the fans are like a what if, like maybe.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Yeah. And credit to Renato, man. I was listening to his post-fight videos on and everything. By the way, he's so bloody well-spoken. For English, obviously, is not his first language. He's so bloody well-spoken. But I just liked his outlook on it, and just to say, you know, I dared to dream a little bit. And obviously, he came up short, and he wasn't happy with his performance. But good on him, man. Would we have ever seen him in the title position, given that division and how cutthroat it is? Probably not. Probably not, but he got that opportunity. It was cool for him. Probably got paid a bunch of money, so I'm happy for him. I think he saved it. And finally is from at n.o.2568. Question for Rob. How important is your corner during a fight, and how different would a fight be without their advice?
Yeah, it's important for a lot of different reasons. It's important for just knowing your men are there, knowing your guys are there for you. I hear my corner a lot during the round, when sometimes if you've been hurt during the round, they can bring you back. I've had times where in that second Izzy fight, I got dropped at the end of the first. Where I was sitting on the stool and I was listening to them speak to me, and they kind of brought me back into it a little bit.
Yeah,
it's pretty important, very important, really.
Can I ask you something? I've always thought about this especially when both corners speak English. When a corner is giving advice to one fighter, is that not instantly something that the other corner and the other fighter can also hear and come up with a game plan to counter? It's a bit of a weird one, right?
No, yeah, definitely. That's why a lot of corners have code words.
Do you have code words? Curiosity?
Yeah, we do. We got things we work on that mean certain things.
Yeah. Because obviously that's not something that, the Islams of the world, when they're speaking in Russian, or other fighters as well, that's just something that they don't have to worry about. But when you both speak the same language, usually both English or even both Portuguese or whatever it might be, if you're Brazilian. I always found that interesting.
You've seen fighters comment on their corners screaming out at them in fights. It's funny.
Yeah. The one that I found funny, and I don't know, funny is the wrong word because I didn't like him seeing going, I didn't like, I didn't, it was bad seeing him go out like that, but that Leon Edwards fight with Bilal, Leon's corner was really trying to hype him up and get him back into it, just like they did with the Usman fight, right?
Yeah.
And then he ended up telling him to shut the F up. It wasn't nice, but I can see how it can get heated in those moments where a fighter's just frustrated that nothing that they're doing is working.
Yep. I've been on that end too. I'd never say that, but it sometimes you're doing your best and you're getting flogged. it's hard. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Have you seen that before we end up, finish up, by the way, have you seen that meme where the guy's just getting beat up on the ground and the coach is saying, stand up. And the guy in the bottom is just like, hold on a second. I'm trying to stand up. It's a bit like that, right? They're telling you to do things, and they I am trying, of course. It's just freaking hard.
Yep.
But that is it, Rob. That was episode 58 of the MM Arcade Podcast. As always, you have the final closing message. Take us out, bro.
Yep. Again, as always, thank you to our subs and to our fans and to anybody that's just tuned in and subscribed and joined. Thank you very much. Welcome 100%. To the team. Otherwise, guys, thank you very much. This is going to be the last podcast for a few weeks, so hold tight. And, I'll see you in a few weeks.